Well, hello, hello. Welcome to everyone. This is Sherry from Simply Celebrate, and I'm so excited to have so many of you on the line, and especially excited to welcome Candace Dobie. And Candace, in case you don't know it, is an empowerment speaker, and she combines personal storytelling with a powerful presence to spark a desire in people to live courageously. Candace has spoken to more than 6,000 students across the Southeast at pep rallies, seminars, classrooms, and graduation ceremonies. She was a featured speaker at Patty Dye's Life is a Verb Camp in 2015, which is where I was fortunate enough to meet her and where myself and many other really lucky people got to hear this talk. And I just loved this talk so much. I'm really excited that Candace was willing to join us today to share her talk with us all again. So welcome, Candace. Are you out there? Oh, Candace. I just realized you're muted. Candace, will you do me a favor and, well, hold on a minute. Candace?
Yes.
You must have called in the other. What is your phone number? And I'll go ahead and unmute you.
Okay, it's 919-824-4271.
Gotcha. Okay, we'll do that again, and I'll. All right, Candace, you out there now?
I am here.
Yay! Welcome again, and thank you so much. I just loved, you were just so wonderfully enthusiastic and willing when I asked you if you'd be willing to do this, and I'm so grateful to you.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you to everyone who is on the call. So
Yeah, it's fun that so many people showed up, that we're so excited to hear this, and I know there are tons of people who are going to be listening to the replay, too. So
awesome.
Is there anything you need before you get started? Do you just want to, like, jump on in?
I will just jump on in if that works for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. All right, great. Take it away.
All right. Well, again, thank you for everyone who joined the call. I think this is really cool that we could set this up. So, again, thank you, Sherry. One thing that you may or may not know about me, I know several people on the call do know this, but I love dancing. I have always loved dancing. So much so that I pretty much do it everywhere I go. So I dance around the house. I dance in front of my bathroom mirror. I dance in the car. And typically when I do this, I either freak people out who pull up beside me, or if I'm lucky, I make them smile. But I dance everywhere, in my head, in my dreams. And it's actually this pure love of dancing that gave me the crazy yet exhilarating idea to try out for the Top Cats dance team to cheer on the National Football League's Carolina Panthers from the sidelines. So hopefully these are soon to be our Super Bowl champions. But really, the reason why this idea is so crazy is because I am not a formally trained dancer. I mean, it gets only about as formal as dancing in front of my bathroom mirror. But for whatever reason, I was just so overwhelmingly excited about the thought of auditioning for this professional cheerleading team. So the way that things kind of work with me is that if an idea stays in my head, if it kind of lollygags around for longer than a week or so, I promised myself a long time ago that I must entertain those ideas. And so I did. So on that day, I committed to trying out for the Carolina Panthers dance team. I had about a month before auditions. And so during that month, I was going to get ready. I became a member of a gym so that I could start to strengthen my muscles. And I actually started stretching every day and every night so that I could become more flexible and work towards, you know, comfortably sitting in a split, which is what real cheerleaders do. I also signed up for a beginner's jazz class so that I could start to train my mind and my body to learn choreography, and then I would use that choreography to start to put together my own first-round routine, which was actually a requirement of the audition process. So in this month, I was training, I was getting ready, and actually I was bubbling over with all kinds of excitement and confidence and passion. And I think if you could sum me up in a word during this time, that word would be ready. I felt like I was so ready to audition. I was ready until the moment that audition day actually came, and I drove up to the stadium, I got out of my car, and I approached the audition line of 150 21 and 23-year-old girls who were listening to Try Out Music in their earphones, and they were spinning their perfect spray tan sequin-adorned bodies in pirouettes as they practiced their audition routine. And even though I had been practicing and I had been stretching and lifting weights and working on my moves, and, you know, even though I had been cool and confident and collected all this time, it wasn't until this moment in the audition line when it dawned on me that I was approaching 30. My outfit looked completely different from their outfits. It lacked all kinds of sparkle, and I didn't have on the right dance shoes. So who was I kidding? I mean, who was I to really think that I could compete with these pretty young things who had been taking dance lessons since they were four? And here I was, this girl who just liked dancing in front of her mirror and in the car. And I really started to believe that I did not belong there. So this is the moment when absolute dread swooped in like a thief in the night and threatened to hijack every ounce of boldness and courage that occupied my body previously. So sometimes this moment of dread, it comes at the beginning of an endeavor for me, so it tries to stop me before I even start, or it comes in moments like this when, you know, I start comparing myself to other people. And it doesn't really matter what the conditions are, this moment is sure to show up when I try to do something new and different. So this is the moment that I found myself in the middle of the proverbial bridge that transports me and you and everybody from fear to boldness. But the thing is, I've been challenging myself and my limits long enough to know that I would not be able to leave this spot in the middle of the bridge. I wouldn't be able to leave it or at least get beyond it if I didn't have a confrontation with fear itself. So here I was, middle of the bridge, with the question, Candace, are you going to audition or are you going to go home? And it's a similar question that I think all of us probably ask ourselves depending on what we're doing. So, you know, are you going to finish writing the book that's been dancing around in your head, or do you convince yourself that you don't have the right words or that your writing isn't good enough? Or, you know, do you paint the canvas, do you buy the paint and the canvas and the brushes to create whatever masterpiece you have in your head, or do you keep it kind of bound in your brain because, you know, quote, unquote, you've never done this before? So this is what it means to be in the middle of the bridge. It's being at a point in which you have a confrontation with fear. And during this confrontation, one of two things will happen. Either you and I will decide whether it is we're going to surrender to fear or if we're going to conquer it. So are we going to turn back or are we going to move forward? And let's just say, you know, you decide to do nothing, you know, not even address the fear. Well, that's the same as surrendering to it. The outcome of this confrontation is largely dependent, though, on how well we prepare for it. So because I've been in the middle of the bridge many times, and here I am again during this audition process, you know, there are three things that I learned about preparing for the confrontation that I wanted to share. The first one is you and I must know fear's position or its point of view. Just like any confrontation that you plan to go into with a friend or a spouse or a boss, you anticipate their position so that you can be better prepared for the confrontation. Fear is the same way. So fear has a survival function. There is actually a biological benefit to fear, and it is activated to protect you and me from harm. And this includes, you know, imminent danger, you know, real harm, but it also includes social harm and internal harm. And in fact, sociologists and anthropologists believe that fear is socially constructed. But to be fair to fear, you know, fear just doesn't want us to experience rejection or discomfort or ridicule or defeat. And so it does everything that it can to get you ready for flight, to get you the heck out of Dodge. But the really important thing to know about fear is that, you know, it can't and it doesn't distinguish everything that it's protecting you from. So while it tries to protect you from rejection and discomfort, it is also protecting you from, or it's causing you to evade, possibility. And that is the problem. So when I confront fear, I actually engage it in conversation. I talk to it like a person. And actually, my fear takes on the persona of a sassy Black girl who thinks she knows everything. So, you know, I start out by just letting fear know that I know where it's coming from. You know, fear, I know you don't want me to get shown up by these 21-year-old semi-professional dancers. I know you want to save me from embarrassment and judgment, you know, and I know you want to coddle me in comfort, and thank you for wanting to protect me. Like, I really appreciate it. But I just have a couple of questions for you. So tell me, if I don't try out, then what was all of my training and preparation for? Or if I don't try out, how will I ever know if I could have made the team? Fear, if I don't go forward with this, you know, will I be dishonoring my love for dancing and the commitment that I made to myself? And let's just say, fear, I totally bomb it. And I know that that's exactly what you're trying to protect me from, you know, totally falling flat and bombing this thing. But let me ask you this. At the end of the day, won't I still be able to say that I did it? So I talk to fear from a very familiar perspective. And while, you know, I'm asking all of these questions of fear, I make sure that I ask myself another very important question. And that is, which would you rather feel, regret or discomfort? Now, this is a really important question. It's the second lesson that I learned about the confrontation. And it's important to consider which emotion you would rather feel after you made the decision of fight or flight. You know, am I going to get the heck out of Dodge, or am I going to go through with this thing? Looking back on a life with regret can be painful because we can't change the decisions of our past. And I think the big regrets that we can't take back or change are the hardest to process. And the thing about regret that I've learned is that it lingers and lingers and lingers. And it just seems to never go away because it's in your memory. Whereas with discomfort, over time, you can become desensitized to the discomfort that you might have felt when you were pursuing a goal. And actually, the work of researchers at Cornell show that in the long run, people regret inaction more than anything. So I have to ask myself in these situations, you know, do I want to look back on the road not taken and regret that I didn't commit, you know, that I didn't give it a try? You know, do you want to, you know, let an opportunity pass you by, or would you rather look back down the road that you did travel and admit that absolutely it was hard? You know, there were some roadblocks, there were some detours, some intense hills to climb, and of course, you know, thoughts of wanting to give up. But at the end of the day, you did it. You don't have to think about the what if, the should have, the could have, because you did it. So, you know, regret or discomfort, what's it going to be? That's an important question to consider. And the last thing I learned about the confrontation with fear is that it may actually be a series of confrontations or conversations that you end up having. So it might not be always that you achieve this one declarative victory over fear where you kind of just smack it down with your curiosity and it just clears the way for you to skip to the other side of the bridge. You know, no, that typically doesn't happen. You may only be able to overcome fear long enough to take one itsy, bitsy, teeny, weeny step towards the other side of the bridge. And then typically what happens, at least with me, is that fear is right back up in your face after that, you know, saying, Candace, hold on, wait a minute, I sense some movement. Girl, where are you going? Don't you know there's danger over there? And so then what I have to do is I've got to ask more questions, and I've got to, you know, I've got to persevere to suspend fear just long enough for me to take one more itsy bitsy teeny weeny step towards the other side of the bridge. So you keep questioning fear and you keep poking holes in its position until you find yourself on the other side of the bridge. And that is exactly what happened to me the morning I decided to try out for the Carolina Panthers dance team. I actually took my first step by deciding to stay in the audition line. And then I took my next step when I pinned my number on my tank top and I lined up for my first round routine. And then I took another step when I promised myself that despite my lack of formal training and despite, you know, my age in comparison to the other dancers and despite not having the proper dance shoes, And despite making up my own first round routine versus having a dance teacher, you know, create one for me, I decided that I was going to hit the dance floor and leave every ounce of passion that I had on the floor so that I could leave knowing that I had done whatever I could have done to give it my best shot. Because after all, I love dancing. I dance in front of the bathroom mirror. I dance in my car, I dance in my dreams, I dance in my head. And so that's what I did. And I had to end up doing that four more times because I made it to the final round of competition. So the final competition day came. I actually got to dance with real Carolina Panthers Top Cats pom-poms, and it was an intense 2 hours of routines. And they told us that they would let us know in 48 hours what the final roster was going to be. So I waited very anxiously for the email to come across my inbox, and 2 days later in the afternoon it did. And so I opened the email with more caution than I think I opened my college acceptance letter. And I read the introduction, and I scanned the list of names really quickly. And then I scanned the list of names again a little bit more slowly. And I realized that I didn't make the team. I actually got cut in the last round, and 25 amazing ladies went on to make up the 2011 Top Cats dance team. But I was so grateful to have committed to myself and to cross the bridge to understand just how badass I was. And so the interesting thing about this is that a year after I auditioned, my company relocated me to Atlanta, Georgia, making that audition process my only opportunity to try out for the Carolina Panthers dance team. And it's an opportunity that hasn't come again. So in closing, I just want to say that you and I and all of us, We are going to have dreams, and we are going to have fears. And actually, these fears don't mean us too much harm, but they can definitely stand in the way of achieving our deepest desires. So I think the best way to handle fear and to confront fear is just to prepare yourself and myself for the confrontation. And we can do that by understanding fear's position and then asking ourselves, you know, and really considering, what's it going to be? Is it going to be discomfort, or is it going to be regret? And then understanding that one confrontation with fear could actually end up being a series of confrontations with fear, so that, you know, we only are able to take one itsy bitsy teeny weeny step at a time towards the other side of the bridge. But all of those steps will culminate into finally making it to the other side. Thank you.
Oh, Candace. I know everyone else is still muted, so they can't. Well, actually, maybe I'm just going to open it up for a minute so that we can all just, like, yay, and then I'll go back to Q&A mode first, because I just want to know us all. Wow, that was fun. That was like a party. Everybody's
unmuted. Yay. Thank you.
Yay.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Yay. So, Candace, that, you know, I just have to say, like, it's amazing to me how much you can convey in such a short period of time. Like, I just feel like there's so much in that talk that I could, like, live off of that for a really long time. So I thank you. Oh, do I have, are you muted again? Yes, you are. Let's get you. Candace.
Oh, now I'm not muted.
Yay!
Thank you so much, Sherry. Again, you know, thank you for the opportunity and just to share this story. So I really thank you.
And the thing that I was thinking, I mean, there were so many things. I was actually jotting down a bunch of notes again, just like I did the first time. But what struck me so much this time at the very end was I was thinking, if you hadn't taken each of those steps across that bridge, none of us would have gotten to hear this story like that.
Oh.
You know, do you know what I mean? Like, that was
yeah.
a whole other side of it that you probably didn't even know at the time. You didn't know that you were, you know.
You're absolutely right. This was definitely one. I mean, you know, when I talk about being in the middle of the bridge and really considering going home, it was a real thought. Like, this is one story or one example where I seriously had to, like, talk to myself, talk to fear in the line, because I really was about to go home. So, I'm glad it ended the way it did.
Yeah, and it just, I think it also goes to show, like, my own spiritual teacher has a phrase, you know, the process is the outcome. And I think that this is a great example of that, too. Like, I mean, of course we're all rooting for you. You know, even as you're telling the story again, even though I heard it once before, I was still like, oh, I hope she makes it. You know, like, we're all wanting that particular outcome. But the truth of it is there's such beauty and there's such celebration in every single one of those steps. And I think that's the piece that I love so much about what you're teaching us.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, there was so much, you know, education, I think, in the steps for me too. Like you mentioned, I didn't know that this was going to be something that I could talk about, you know, long after it happened. But you're right. The learning and everything, the growth, the development, and everything is definitely in the process. Because I thought I seriously thought I wanted to make the team. I mean, I don't know what it would have looked like if I actually had made the team now, you know. I don't know if that was the outcome that was even supposed to happen. I learned so much just by getting this far and, you know, learning, like you said, each learning something through each step of the process.
Right, and you're not sitting here like this is, again, you know, both the times I've heard this, what has struck me so much was that really succinct when you said, you know, would you rather feel regret or would you rather feel discomfort? Like, that's such a powerful question, because unless we're asking that of ourselves, you know, it's easy to opt for, like, I want to be comfortable. I don't want to be pushed outside of my comfort zone. I want to just stay safe. But when you pose that question for us to ask ourselves, it puts us in a place of real consciousness.
Absolutely.
And yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it's a question that I definitely ask myself each time that I'm trying to do something new or I feel fear creeping in, trying to take over and smother any kind of hope of courageousness or boldness that existed previously. But, you know, it really is true. I mean, there's probably something that all of us have regretted that we didn't do in our life that we still even think about, you know. And so no one wants to feel discomfort. Totally get it. It's not comfortable. It's not fun. But the alternative, you know, when you really consider the alternative, it's much graver. I mean, it's much longer lasting. It's much more, it settles with you and stays with you a lot longer than discomfort ever could. And the thing about discomfort is once you do something enough or long enough, you know, discomfort transitions into comfort. So, you know, whereas regret doesn't really transition into anything else. It's just regret. So,
Yeah. And I mean, when you said that part about getting transferred, you know, so that you wouldn't have even had the opportunity to try out again. And imagine, I mean, not only would you not be here talking to us all about this amazing, you know, inspirational story, however, you would always wonder, oh, what if I, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think I would have beat myself up too, because we do prepare. You know, I had put preparation into it. It's just like, you know, when all of us work on something, we prepare for something, we put time and energy into something, and then, you know, having that investment go to waste, so to speak, or nothing to ever come from it, or see if anything could ever come from it. So I think not only would I have been regretful that I didn't try out just because it's something that I wanted to do, but I think I would have been regretful that I had put so much into it and then decided not to go for it with it. So that's time and energy and effort and resources kind of wasted in the process.
Exactly. And, you know, it just struck me all anew again, like, because I love to dance. I love to dance myself. And I once did like a dance flash mob. And
nice.
I remember it was a huge thing, because I always have felt like I'm all like, you know, all left feet and fumbling around. But the thing is that again, like the process of going to all the rehearsals and the process of doing it. And even though I did screw up during the thing and whatever, like it's the life I want to live. And I think that's the thing, you know, like when I imagined you in that line, like that's the life you want to live. You want to be that person. And I think that's the thing that I love so much about this talk, and that, like, you know, certainly with, you know, everything that I so love, like with the people who are in my Simply Celebrate list too, is it's that idea of, it's like, really, what are we doing to live the life we want to lead? You know, what steps? And it's not so much even about what's on the other side.
No, I think you are exactly right. I mean, life is made up of experiences, and you know, the fact that you're able to tell your story again about the flash mob, or even, you know, when you think about it, you have the memories that are there and that will always be there. But life is made up of experiences, and I just want to live a life, you know, I want to live a courageous life. That is my goal while I'm here on this earth, is just to live, you know, a courageous life and to help other people live courageously too. And so it is pretty cool to be able to have stories like this where you tango with fear, you dance with it, you ask it questions, you get it to simmer down a bit so that you can take a step towards, you know, something that you're hoping to do, or a step towards the unknown. Because I think that's really where fear comes from, is just the unknown. So I think we decide not to do things, even if we have prepared, even if we have put time and energy into something. It's the unknown that eventually gets us, because, you know, you really don't know. You don't know the different things and the different options and variables that could happen. And so what happens is, I think we're overcome by the negative things that could come from the unknown, and don't focus at all on any of the possibility that could come from the unknown. So in my quest to live courageously, one of the things that I just try to do is focus on the possibility that could come from the unknown versus, you know, I think the scary part, or the part that isn't so good, which our brains like to focus on more.
I love that. I love that. I remember Brendon Burchard once saying that, like, we're always doing this what if, and we always follow it with the negative. Well, what if I fall? Well, what if I fail? Well, what if, you know? And he said, all you have to do, and it's exactly what you're just saying, is turn it around. Like, you know, what if people love this? What if I have a great time? What if it's, you know? So, what a great reminder. Well, I feel go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's exactly right. Just flipping it around.
I just wanted to see if anybody who's on, I know we had a couple questions that people posted who couldn't be here, and I'll ask you those. But first, if there's anybody who's on the call that had either a comment or a story of your own, or you have a question for Candace, go ahead and just press *6 to ask a question, and then it'll add you to the queue. So if anybody has any questions, and if not, I'll go ahead and share the ones that people sent online. So again, that's *6. Oh, it looks like, okay, I'm going to unmute someone in the 908 area code.
Hi, it's Linda.
Hey,
hi, Linda.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you. This was just really such a great reminder of doing it afraid, you know, do it anyway. And if we were unmuted during the call at that part where you said, and I didn't make it, and I bet you would have heard all of us say, oh, like you probably felt it come through, but I was like, oh, no, like I was so rooting for you, you know, but regardless, it's a great example, it's a great illustration, and thank you for doing this call, it was great.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks, Linda. Okay,
my pleasure.
It looks like
thank you, guys.
I've got someone in the 650 area code. Wait, whoops. 650 area code.
I'm just wondering if we...
Whoops. Sorry about that. Hello? Did we lose you?
Candace is here. Oh.
Candace. Yeah. I've got you unmuted, who's ever in the 650 area code. Well, I'm going to leave you unmuted, and I'm also going to unmute. I've also got a question from Tina.
Did you say Tina? Okay.
Yeah, Tina.
Okay. I just want to say thank you totally to Candace. Your talk the first time and now has helped me so much, and I think what's staying with me right now, and I had not remembered it from camp, is you were saying regret or discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a lot of discomfort right now, and it could very easily turn into regret, and it's just something that is probably for me the most powerful thing you've said, so thank you.
It's such a powerful question, because, you know, so in the beginning, comfort, so retreating, surrendering to fear, and it's surrendering to comfort, that's going to be the easiest thing to do. And that's why I think people kind of succumb to fear more than they would like to, because it's just the easier thing to do. But then that can lead to regret. It can lead to down the road, you know, us coming back and saying, dang, why didn't I, you know, do that thing? Well, it's because you didn't want to feel the discomfort that you knew you were going to feel. But I think it's just pushing beyond that initial, what do I want to feel? What do I not want to feel? Pushing beyond the immediate, the temporary, and just saying, wow, you know, let me look at this a little bit longer term. And man, I think I could be uncomfortable, you know, for a little bit versus being regretful for a long bit. So it's just extending that question or extending that, you know, consideration of that feeling a little bit more.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for that. Candace,
can you update us about your dancing career?
I love that question. I have no dancing career, but I do dance everywhere. Like, if there is a dance floor, if there is even something that resembles, like, it could be a dance floor, or if there is music, I am dancing. So no dancing career, but this girl definitely loves to dance still.
Wonderful.
Was that, I'm sorry, because I'm not, there's no name showing up, so I hate to keep referring to you as the 650, but was that you? Because I still have, okay, good. Who was that? Oh, I guess we won't know now. But so, Candace, there are a couple questions of folks who couldn't come in, and I'm going to go ahead and ask those, and then we'll see if anybody else has any that are live on the line. But we had a question from Tracy Weiss, who said, how do you know when your fear is the lizard brain talking and when it's actual fear that you should listen to?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I think about fear, I think all fear is protective. Like, you know, like I was saying, in understanding fear's position, I think all fear is protective. It's trying to protect us from something. I would say the most important question to ask is, the real fear keeps us from danger, from being in dangerous situations. And real fear, the benefit of it is to keep you alive. It's to get you out of places where you shouldn't be, where you might, you know, be in harm's way or die or whatever. So that's real fear. So the question that I consider is this fear connected to survival? Is this fear, you know, connect it to life or death. And the reality is most fear isn't. And so when you ask that initial question and you ask, is this fear connected to life or death, and the answer is probably going to be no, then what I think that does is it allows you to start asking more questions. I think the thing in understanding fear's perspective or point of view is just questioning the fear. I think, you know, as it relates to biological fear, I think, you know, there is no time to question it. If you're about to get bitten by an alligator, you don't question that fear. You run the other way. But I think if we all have a moment where we can question our fear to start to ask it, questions, we'll start to understand that it's not a, you know, there is no biological benefit. It's not life and death. And then you can open up, you know, a pathway to start asking more questions of the fear to really sense if it's real or imagined or your lizard brain or imminent.
And what a great response, because, you know, I just, when you were saying that, I was thinking again, like, how often without asking that question, like, is this a real, like, am I really in danger? Without asking that, I know for myself, I tend to just believe it. I have that feeling in my stomach, right? And it's like, and it's like, no, run. But when you said that, I thought, you're right. Like, how rarely are, you know, especially in this day and age, you know, that it's not that. It's usually some other kind of, like, social discomfort kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's usually social. It's connected to some kind of social construct. So.
Yeah. So I just want to remind people, if there's anybody who's on the line who wants to ask a question or have a comment or just say hi to Candace, it's *6. And in the meantime, I'll go ahead and ask. We had a question. I love this. Her name is Susie Q. Susie Q says, my quick question is to ask how to deal with fear triggers. I've been working on identifying them, but once that's done, I would like tips on how to effectively and quickly shift gears to go for it right then and there, without that thinking or procrastinating, and then I find myself at the dreaded hindsight part.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that goes back to questioning fear. You know, this is the biggest thing that I've learned just in confronting fear is questioning it. So are we procrastinating? Are we just leaving it there because we're not dealing with it? I would think that that's probably why. You let the fear just kind of settle and linger and manifest. And so when we do that, anything that we let, you know, just sit in our body or just sit around, you know, I think it starts to gain power. I mean, we can think about diseases in our body or things in our body. If it's just there and it's manifesting, then it gains power and it can spread and that kind of thing. So I think when we kind of just leave fear and we procrastinate and we kind of just let it stay in our brain, it starts to gain power, and that's probably why we succumb to fear more than we overcome it. But I think if we can ask questions pretty immediately of fear, so if fear has been triggered, the quicker we get at asking questions, all right, is this real? Is this imagined? Is this related to life or death? Is this social? And then we start asking, you know, all right, if I don't do this, what's going to happen? If I do this, you know, what could happen? And it's really that curiosity in the beginning that I think helps get us through working through our fears.
Yes, yes, yes. And I love it. I really, really love that you keep emphasizing that thing about stopping and asking the questions. Because I think for myself, you know, it's such an easy tool to remember. Like, stop and ask, you know. And you, when you were doing your talk, too, it was so fun. And, you know, just the way you were like, I'm just sassy with fear, you know. I love that. It brings some humor to it, too, which I think is really an important aspect. You know, when we're feeling fear, there's often not a lot of humor. And I love that you brought that. Like, I could imagine you with your hand on your hip. You know?
Right. I mean, I do. I think the more familiar we can get with fear, or at least I try to get with fear, you know, the more familiar you get with it, the more it doesn't feel like it's this foreign thing or it's this, you know, thing that's so powerful and able to dominate you. So that's why I actually talk to my fear and I treat it like a person, and it is this bassy, you know, little thing that thinks she knows everything. So when I can add these, you know, kind of these human characteristics around it, I can talk to her in a more or fear in a more focused way. And so I think when we familiarize fear, when we don't think it's just this thing, but we actually get comfortable with making, you know, fear comfortable when it shows up, then I think that could also help us deal with it better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know we're almost at time. If you have just a couple of minutes, I had one more kind of comment question that I thought would be great to read. If you're all right, you got a few more minutes?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Good, good. So Carol McWilliams had written in on the Facebook page, I want to break through my fear. I have at times of being more visible on social media, and I want to show up as my authentic, powerful self with joy. And I loved that she posted that because I think probably almost everyone who's online can probably relate to that feeling, you know, of wanting to just show up authentically with joy as who we are. And then that fear comes in. Don't say that. You know, those kinds of things that stop us from just being authentically who we are. So I was wondering if you had anything to say about that.
Yeah. I think that just it definitely plays into the fear being a social, you know, a social construct. But it goes back to, you know, that fear, like what it's trying to protect us from, and you know, the embarrassment or defeat or looking a certain way. And so, you know, I don't know. I think this is a good. It's a really good question. And being authentic is, I think, something that has to be practiced. So I don't know that I have a really good answer to that one, Sherry, other than, you know, I think it's just important to understand what the fear is, like, or consider what the fear is and what it's stemming from and what it's seeking to protect us from. And again, it's those things like embarrassment or fear for not being accepted or fear for being ridiculed. You know, I think we just have to start to question that and see if it's really, you know, worth trading in our authenticity for.
And I love what you just said, actually. You said we have to practice being authentic, which I love that because I think often it's sort of like, you know, why can't I just be me? Or why can't I just – and it's actually – when you said that, I thought, yeah, because what we're practicing is just like you said, it's each of those small steps across the bridge that allow us to – you know, it is practicing being, it's practicing being exactly who we are and not letting the fear speak for us or silence us.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so maybe
and
it's like,
I was just going to say, I think to me too, that's a practice of letting go. You know, so the fear of being accepted or not, or wanting to be looked at a certain way, and so that's why you either say things or don't say things. You know, I think that's the practice too of letting go of some of those things of you know, caring what people say or what people think. And so, as in the practice of being authentic, I think, you know, we have to practice also letting go of some of that.
Yes. Yeah, and I was thinking again that for me, my own practice sometimes, and especially if it has to do with something public like that, it's, you know, I'll actually say to myself, you know, it's more important to me that I let this energy that I'm feeling right now, you know, live out in the world in the way that it's wanting to be expressed. That's more important to me than any amount of ridicule or whatever, you know, that I'm imagining might come back at me. That it's like, it's a way of sort of aligning with myself and my energy and just being like, yeah, I honor this. And if even if nobody else in the world likes it or whatever, you know, this is what life is putting through me right now.
Yeah, exactly. Completely agree.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, is there anything else that you would like to share that you feel like is still sort of lingering there that you'd like to say to all of us before we close?
No, I don't have anything additional. I love thinking about fear and courage, and I just would invite anyone that's on the call, if, you know, it's a topic that I love, and like I mentioned before, I want to live a courageous life. So if anyone wants to continue the conversation just about fear or courage and talk together, I don't have everything figured out. you know, and so I'd love to chat with anyone who wants to continue the conversation about fear or courage on Facebook or through email or calls. So
I'll go ahead and post your contact when I post the replay, but do you want to go ahead and let people know right now, just tell people where they can connect with you?
Sure. So my Facebook is facebook.com/CandaceAvant, CandaceAvant, or you can just search for my name, Candace Dobie. And then email CandaceDobie@gmail.com. And then if we email or we Facebook, we can exchange phone numbers or, you know, figure out another way to stay in contact.
Awesome. And I'll post that too in case anyone, you know, needs that again. I'll make sure I post that with the replay. And I'm going to go ahead and just open up the line so that we can all just thank you together. And before I do that, Candace, thank you. I'm sorry if you could feel like my energy is so high right now just from hearing you again and thinking about this and feeling that sort of letting go of like, yeah, you know, I want to move toward the possibility and away from the fear. So thank you.
This was fun. I do enjoy talking about it. So again, Sherry, thank you for the opportunity.
All right, let's see if I can open up the...
Thank you, Candace and Sherry. Thank you so much for doing it. Okay.
Bye, Candace.
Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.